Mail call.
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
It is our Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday. We missed it yesterday. People were wanting it. People were asking for it. So we bring it to you. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? Ask us anything. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line for our first question. Pena, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's your question?
Hey, guys. All right. So, tie game. 30 seconds left. You got Forrest Gump on one side, Bobby Boucher on the other side. Forrest wants to go home, and Bobby thinks Forrest said something bad about his mama. Oh. Who's winning that battle? Thank y'all. Have a great day.
That's a great question, Pena.
I think Bobby Boucher is going to beat the crap out of Forrest Gump.
I'm going to go Bobby Boucher as well to get the stop against Forrest Gump. What I've noticed with Forrest Gump is that he has great point A to point B speed.
He's got endurance and speed. Yeah.
He's got great point A to point B speed. He did great things at Alabama. We understand that. But what I didn't see with Forrest Gump that I would really want to see at the next level, especially going up against a talent like Bobby Boucher, who is a tackling machine, a dominant defensive player, I don't see the lateral quickness in Forrest Gump. Have you seen Forrest Gump cut like Barry Sanders? Uh-uh. I haven't.
I honestly don't see the aggressiveness. I see Forrest as being, you know, a guy that has a high motor and high endurance, but doesn't want to hurt a ladybug.
Yeah.
And I see Bobby Boucher, who can flip a switch, and he can go get him.
He's a little mean.
I
got the mean
like
gene.
High quality H2O.
I got Bobby Boucher.
I
got Bobby Boucher making that tackle.
I do too.
713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Our Mailbag Monday, 713-780-3776. Hey, Blankers, do you think the Packers can make some noise in the playoffs when they beat the Lions?
I don't want to get ahead of myself yet again. As you guys know, I hate doing that. The fact that we're having this conversation means there's a lot of people that are not in currently in the Twitch chat and otherwise that told me that my season was over and that I needed to embrace the suck and do all these things. I'm happy that they're in the discussion. I don't think that, you know, Dick Willie was talking about earlier, I want to see Brady and Rodgers in the NFC Championship game. I don't think there's any chance that's going to happen. But the fact that they have a legit chance to control their own destiny and get in when they were 4-8 and I basically had written off the season, I'll take it. I don't think anybody, I will say this, I don't think any of the top four seeds want to see Rodgers coming to town with nothing to lose, knowing that they could, they have enough weapons to at least compete.
I think they have enough weapons to compete. I think they're getting better, too. I think a lot of those young receivers that they had, Dobbs, Watson, that they're starting to play better, as you expect rookies to do.
Don't sleep on what Jair Alexander did when they finally let him go one-on-one on Jefferson, too.
Yeah.
He can be a shutdown corner.
He got a little frustrated, Justin Jefferson did. I want the Packers to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
There I said it. Remember we had our NFL draft, and I had the Packers. So I want the Packers to win it all.
I don't remember how that went, how...
Yeah, I don't know if we made a bet on that or not.
I know the other bet, and I don't remember how that's it.
I can tell you one thing. It didn't go well for me.
Good. So you're going to be buying us lunch.
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be outstanding.
And we get to pick, right?
I had the Rams.
Yeah. I have some big ideas on what you're going to
bring the Steelers.
Bring us to lunch.
Yeah.
So that's good. You're going to owe us lunch. That's outstanding.
It did not go well.
That's great. I cannot wait for the lunch that you're going to provide to us. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees on our Mailbag Monday? 713-780-3776. 1970 asks, are the Nets a serious contender?
No question. Absolutely no question. Anytime you can put the talent of, take all the other distractions and off the court stuff away. If you could put Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in some semblance of, I'm not a huge Ben Simmons guy, but just the role players that they have, there's a reason why they've won 12 in a row now. They could have done this at any point in time. When they can eliminate the distractions and just concentrate on basketball, that's as talented as a team as there is in the NBA, and I don't care which conference you're talking about.
See, I'm actually kind of a Ben Simmons guy. Like, and maybe it's because I feel like I need to defend Ben Simmons. I don't think Ben Simmons is the best player on a really good team. I don't think he's the best player, like the second best player on a really good team.
I think if you paid Ben Simmons $10 to $15 million a year to be a guy on your team in your rotation, People would love Ben Simmons.
See, there's two different things to me when it comes to, like, is a player overpaid and is there a guy that's overrated? I don't think that Ben Simmons is necessarily overrated. In fact, I think he's kind of underrated because everybody talks about how overpaid he is. Does he make too much money for what he brings to the table? Yes, he's like Tobias Harris. He makes way too much money than the production. But Tobias Harris is a good basketball player. Ben Simmons is a good basketball player, and in the role that he's in with Brooklyn, where they're not asking him to be a primary scorer, he's not even close. Like, he's like 10th in scoring on their team. But he can rebound, he's a great passer, and he defends really well. In the right spot, he's a really good player, and that's the right spot for him.
I agree with you, but I will say this. What really annoys me the most about Ben Simmons is he's been a silver spoon kid his whole life. So he's out there flaunting his money, flaunting, you know, his outfits when he's not playing, and drawing attention that is going to no doubt be negative, as opposed to just, if you're dealing with a lot of things, then just try to be the best teammate you can be, give whatever you can, and basically stay out of the limelight. But when you're social media and on national TV and otherwise, you're bringing more attention to yourself only to not play in the past, and then to do what you're doing now, whatever that is, to be a role player, you're not a superstar. Stop acting like it.
Yeah, hey, he's not a superstar. I agree with you. But in a good spot, good role, I think this is the one for him. 713-780-3776. Questions for the Killer Bees, 0170. When are the Eagles going to clinch the number one seed? Aren't they kind of running out of time? There's really only one answer, right?
Yeah,
week 18?
Yeah, they better. And I would imagine Hurts is going to be back. And I would imagine that they understand at the end of the day that first round bye would be very important. I would think that they're going to win this week, and I would think that they're going to use this as a prep to get ready for the playoffs, but I don't know. I mean, the Gardner Minshew experiment hasn't gone extremely well. Losing to the Saints was not what anybody thought when they saw the schedule, but yeah. You know, we'll see how they play this week.
The NFC playoff picture is wild.
Oh, it's intriguing,
like,
man.
You have the Eagles with 13 wins. Then you have three teams with 12 wins, San Fran, Minnesota, Dallas, and then it's possible that the final three playoff teams will all have 9 wins. Like, it is bizarre in the NFC. And last year, only one 9-win team made the playoffs. It's crazy in the NFC. I think any team in the NFC that makes the playoffs is capable of winning the NFC.
I think you're absolutely right. I don't think they're capable of winning the Super Bowl, but I think you can't say no to a Tampa team with Brady. Yeah.
Maybe not the Giants.
I would agree because of the quarterback position, because there's still Daniel Jones hasn't been to the playoffs to know that on the big stage he can do it. And obviously, Barkley's a weapon. They have some weapons. But I think when you look at Brady and you look at Rodgers, no one really wants to play them. Jason Garrett said it. Look, he beat us in the divisional round twice. I don't care what their record is. I don't want to see them. I think the teams feel like that. And Minnesota's got so much talent.
They could win 3 in a row. They could win 3 in a row to win the NFC. Now, I would say Seattle and Detroit, if they make the playoffs, they wouldn't be teams that could win the
NFC. Agree.
Sorry about that, Brendan. 713-780-ESPN. Your questions for the Killer Bee. 713-780-3776. 5619. Real questions. Would you be okay with Van Gundy or some other veteran coach for these young Rockets? Is it too soon to fire Silas?
I'll end up saying some of this along the way. Silas has got a really tough hand to deal with right now, but I don't think Van Gundy's the answer. It's too soon for a veteran coach because Van Gundy doesn't want to play rookies. Van Gundy's always had an issue that literally we traded Rudy Gay on draft day for Shane Battier.
I thought that was a good trade.
And it turned out to be great. People hated it, but Van Gundy always told Carroll Dawson as the general manager, you can go out and get rookies. I won't play them. And I think that putting Van Gundy in this situation, which is nothing but youth, is not a situation with a recipe for success. I think if he got a veteran or two as part of the mix, I think it would be more conducive later for him, but I don't think right now Van Gundy's the answer.
I like a veteran coach. I don't like Van Gundy specifically, and I'm usually very pro Van Gundy. I wanted Van Gundy when they hired D'Antoni. I love Van Gundy.
If you have a Russell Westbrook or a Chris Paul in a Harden situation, Van Gundy could be the perfect guy.
Yeah.
I don't think it is right now with all the young guys on this team.
But to be fair to the question, he said, would you be okay with Van Gundy or some other veteran coach? Van Gundy, I agree with you, not Van Gundy. I think veteran coach is the way to go.
I think Quinn Snyder would be, we've talked about this in the past, but I think Quinn Snyder type has coached in college, understands kind of the new generation coming up and how to deal with younger kids. I think there are veteran coaches that'd be a perfect fit for this team.
You think it's too early to fire Silas?
It's too early right now.
No, I meant, okay. I'm not exactly sure how the texter's framing the question. Too soon to fire Silas. Maybe if he's talking in season, I agree with you. I wouldn't fire him in season.
Too soon, I wouldn't do it in season, but I think at the end of the season, it's fair to evaluate.
Yeah, this last, like, if this is his last year, is that too soon? I would say no.
No, not at all.
No, I think that it's perfectly fine if you move on from
Steven
Silas.
This is where the Texans hope to be in another year or two. You're ready to take the first big step, the next progression in the rebuild. That's when you look at another coach, and they have, because they have enough talent on their roster now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the killer saying, what home insurance company do you guys recommend?
Home insurance?
B. Hannon says, are the 49ers officially moving off Trey Lance?
I don't think officially. I think that there might be a little bit of a under-the-radar war between the Raiders and the Niners to see what Brady's going to do next. But I think that you can't give up that much draft capital and then completely bail on Trey Lance.
I don't think that they're done with Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is the starting quarterback for San Francisco next year, with the one caveat that you mentioned. That might be the only caveat standing in the way. I would say Rodgers, but the Caps situation is almost impossible.
Rodgers has one of two options. He can quit and walk away, or he can play. But the dead cap and the salary constraints and the way they structured that when he wanted that big deal, he's going to make $50 million next year. He's either going to be a Packer or he's going to be in a rocking chair.
Double Rods, our final one. Jim Harbaugh, would he stay at Michigan or would he come to the Houston Texans if those are his only two choices?
I think he takes the Texans job. I think he realizes this is as far as he can go with Michigan and with NIL and everything that he has to deal with and how hard-ass he wants to be. I think that he's ready to go back to the NFL.
Jim Harbaugh is so thirsty to get back into the NFL.
He was
leaking to every news outlet that would listen last year that Jim Harbaugh's rumored here. Jim Harbaugh would go to the NFL. What's the story that Jim Harbaugh has leaked out this year? That Jim Harbaugh would take an NFL head coaching job if one is offered. He is tired of the college game. He is so ready to move on. He would take any NFL job that is offered. All right, that's our Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday. Coming up next with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We saw a lot of bowl action. Being with the Houston Texans situation, they had the number one pick. They need a quarterback. Stroud looked great against Georgia. Bryce looked great against Kansas State. Any impact from these bowl games on how you view the quarterback class? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, new year, new you. If you've got resolutions, you want somebody that can help you see them through, that's the people at Apollo Men's Health. And it's for women too, for both men and women. If you're looking more energy in your life to start the new year so that you have more energy to go to the gym and stick with your resolutions, they can help you. There's all the different ways they can do hormone therapy. If you want to start with a little bit milder approach, you can do a B12 shot every week like I do to get a little extra energy in your life. But they have so many different ways they can help you and so many services that could be tailor-made for you. The best thing you can do is go to their website, apollomh.com. Find out all the services they offer, and if something interests you or a couple of them, sign up for an appointment. You can do that right on the website. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. And then go in with an open mind. Tell them what you're trying to achieve. Tell them where you're lacking and you feel like you're limited. They can set you up on a program that works. They can get you the results you need. And they are going to be with you every step of the way. That's what I love. They care for their patients. They want to see them get their results and be happy. And that's why I love the staff there too. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. You get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. And then let them walk you through the process and let them tell you how they can help once they find out where you are trying to go. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have questions, they have answers. They have a way to get you where you want to go. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We all watched some college football over the holidays, and overreactions are there about these college quarterbacks. Everybody's going to have hot takes about these college quarterbacks because, quite frankly, that's the most entertaining thing going on about the Houston Texans, getting the quarterback. Which quarterback do you like? We were having these conversations, I remember, like in week two or three. I remember we listed like 10 quarterbacks that, if they were the quarterback of the Texans right now, you'd be more exciting to watch the Houston Texans. But we saw C.J. Stroud against Georgia, who looked really, really good. We saw Bryce against Kansas State, looked really, really good. Do the way that these quarterbacks played in the bowl game, Will Levis, I thought, was outstanding this bowl season. He was great, getting healthy, getting ready for the NFL draft combine, opting out of that game. Best decision that you can make. But any impact of how you view this quarterback class after most of this bowl season is in the books.
Well, I think that the scenario played itself out the way you and I had discussed it a few weeks earlier, and that is that because three of the four guys at the Heisman Trophy ceremony were actually going to play in big-time bowl games and be visible, you were going to see someone could actually play themselves into being that sweetheart of the pre-draft era, where as we get into pre-draft and workouts and combine, that all of a sudden everybody was going to get enamored with somebody, and that guy's C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud at the start of the year was a guy that everybody was talking about as the number one quarterback in this draft class, and it quickly sorted itself out between him and Levis that they weren't on the same level as Bryce Young. Well, the way C.J. Stroud played in a game that they were in command of for the majority of the game, and again, showed toughness, showed running ability, showed the arm, showed a lot of things that gave people the quick, oh my goodness, look out, he's that shining diamond now that I'm enamored with, that's going to start changing conversations. To me, the biggest travesty in all this, but it may be a blessing for the Texans, I don't know, was that no one really saw or realized how great Bryce Young played in his bowl game, too.
No, I think people saw that. Because I saw people tweeting about, like, oh, I know fully well that I said I want Bryce Young to be a Texan this morning, but now after seeing C.J. Stroud, I could see C.J. Stroud in a Texans uniform. So I think that people saw Bryce.
No, but I'm saying, you think they still saw Bryce?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I think what Bryce Young did and the way he did it, I think you can't turn a blind eye to that and say, well, I saw C.J. Stroud. You better have seen Bryce Young, too.
Yeah, and I think people did. Now, what's kind of interesting in this whole like thing is that the way people felt about Bryce Young, like they would have felt that way regardless after how great he was against Kansas State. They already felt that way. C.J. Stroud, I think, made the biggest like impression on people, because I think people probably see Alabama more than C.J. Stroud. They see Stroud playing, you know, every Big Ten team that's lousy except for Michigan, and he's putting up, you know, gaudy numbers, and it's just fantastic. What I saw from Stroud was different than like the way that I kind of viewed his game, to be quite honest. Like, Bryce Young was Bryce Young. Bryce Young's going to do that. C.J. Stroud, we were talking about how we've read comparisons about C.J. Stroud. Like, his NFL comp is Jared Goff. Uh-uh. Like, no way. Like,
the
you're not watching.
The throwing part of it.
Yeah, maybe the arm talent. But people were like, they didn't give him credit for being able to have ability to, like, move the pocket, to run with to be more of a dual threat. C.J. Stroud all of a sudden made us familiar with that part of his game where we didn't really, like, realize it existed. Whereas Bryce Young was like status quo, great Bryce Young.
I think that what we had talked about all along was the same way we talk about it with Alabama quarterbacks. If you just have all-world receivers that can create 5 to 6 yards of space, then how accurate are you really as a quarterback? But like you said, when he's moving the pocket and he is extending plays and then he's showing you he can run too, because a lot of people I don't think gave him enough credit for the fact that he can run. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he was making some more difficult throws and throws on the run while moving the pocket gave a lot of people a new kind of wow moment that said, okay, wait a minute, maybe we were sleeping on this kid a little bit. Maybe it isn't just that he's got great high first round caliber receivers around him.
Mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud made the biggest impression on me. Like, how I felt about Bryce Young is how I feel about a Bryce Young. I love Bryce Young. I don't have him as my number one quarterback, but I love Bryce Young. C.J. Stroud has now entered that conversation for me where he wasn't before, and it is off the bowl game. I do also have a general thought that we overrate how one player looks whenever we're watching one bowl game. We shouldn't be making decisions based on one bowl game. We should be basing decisions on the entire body of work. And also one huge criticism that I have when people evaluate quarterbacks is, like, how good they are in college. General managers aren't drafting quarterbacks or any player based on how good they were in college. They're basing it off of how good they expect them to be over the next 4 to 5 seasons, how they project them to play in the NFL, not how good they were at Alabama, how good that they were at Ohio State, how good they were at Kentucky, and we can go further and further down the list. One other huge criticism that I have when evaluating quarterbacks is, like, the winning gene. Like, oh, this guy's a winner in college. Well, cool, you should be drafting Stetson Bennett then. Like, if you believe that you should be drafting winning quarterbacks, there is not a bigger winner than Stetson Bennett.
It's like
Stetson Bennett's better than Bryce Young head-to-head if we're looking only winning.
The ultimate poster child for that, but now it doesn't correlate to the NFL, is Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow won more than any quarterback in the history of college football. He won Heisman Trophy. He did all the things you want a college quarterback to do. But guess what? He was the best he could be when he was in college football. It's a different game in the NFL. It's a different football. It's a different feel. It's a different, you know, defenses. All the everything that means that you have to be able to see. The one thing that I will say instead of winning is, because you can play your ass off and you can use the intangibles and you can have a pocket presence, and you can make all the right decisions, but you can lose a close football game.
Yeah, but C.J. Stroud.
Exactly. So C.J. Stroud, like a Bryce Young, only they ended up winning, but those are the things where you can say that translates to the NFL. That's something, your pocket presence, your internal clocks, your progressions, the way that you extend plays, the way that you can take a 2-yard loss instead of a 15-yard loss or throw a ball that's a wild ball up there for a pick. Those translate. Those decision-making things translate in the intelligence of the quarterback position. Both those guys I've seen, they have it.
Yeah, I've told you that I'm going to study all these quarterbacks, and I got a good amount of work done over the holiday where I've seen probably half of Will Levis last year. I've seen about half of Bryce Young.
He's one on your
last
list?
Year. He's still number one on my list. I think that his game translates more to the NFL. Here's the harsh reality of this, though. I think that all three of those guys are, like, capable of being the guy. And you might even – some people might even throw Anthony Richardson in the mold. I don't trust quarterbacks who can't complete, like, more than a coin flip of their passes. I don't trust his arm accuracy. I know that people would push back and say, well, Josh Allen at Wyoming – Josh Allen was playing at Wyoming. Anthony Richardson's playing at Florida. Like, there's a difference there. And mm-hmm. Quite honestly, I wouldn't have drafted Josh Allen, and I would have missed that. So, like, I understand. Like,
that's why the jury's still out on Trey Lance. Because he played at a small school. Yeah. He barely played, and people are wondering – can he grasp everything that the NFL has coming from a program where it wasn't even as elaborate as major college football?
See, the what I look for most in a quarterback is, one, I need accuracy. I need an no accurate question. Quarterback. I haven't seen that in Anthony Richardson. You're going to push back and say, well, Josh Allen. And I would say, yeah, I missed on Josh Allen. I wouldn't have drafted him either. It would have been a pretty big whiff. I understand that. I need somebody who can evaluate defenses, and that's tough. That's tough. That's why there's so many quarterback busts, because it's hard to tell which quarterbacks can read defenses, make good decisions against college-caliber competition. Like, it's pretty easy to make good decisions and good reads whenever you have Marvin Harrison Jr., right. When you have Jameson Williams, when you have Wandell Robinson. It is a huge jump from the college game to the NFL game, so it's almost impossible for general managers to evaluate reading defenses, making good decisions.
Poise, pocket presence, those are the kind of things that you want to see, like a quarterback go through, like pressure moments and strife where it looks like they're in a no-win situation to see how they handle it.
But even those pressure moments, like what if you're checking down to Brian Robinson and Brian Robinson's making tons of dudes miss? Like, that's why it's very, very difficult to make that evaluation. And also, your situation matters. Like, is it easier for you to look good in those moments in Alabama or Alabama State? Alabama.
Right. Like, and that's why, on the flip side, I want to see all these guys when they go through their workouts too, but at it from the fact of I'm looking at it with eyes wide open, but I want to see you make tight throws. I want to see you realizing that for every good receiver you got on your team, they got a lockdown corner on the other team. That's when the window gets the size of a Coke bottle as opposed to, you know, half a block where you can hit a receiver.
See, the tight throws are, like, difficult in college, because a tight throw in college, it might be getting home in college, where it's like in the NFL, that ball's pick six. Like, it's tough. But it's really hard.
You can, like, judge touch throws, right? Like, over the middle. Get it over the linebacker, under the defensive back, or fit it into the tight window across the middle. You can get some sense of it, but it's tough because people say, well, he throws a great deep ball. Well, he throws a great deep ball when a guy's running a 4-3 and everybody else on the defense is running a 4-7.
Yeah, and you just have to put it in an area, right?
Yeah, just throw it up there.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Did how Stroud look against Georgia? Did how Bryce looked against Kansas State? Did it impact your decision and how you view this quarterback class? I also have a harsh reality about this quarterback class as it addresses the Houston Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I have a harsh reality about the... Because look, C.J. Stroud against Georgia was impressive to me. There's things that he did in that game that I didn't think he was capable of doing. Like his rollout ability, his ability to beat Georgia with his, and look, he didn't win the game. He's not a winner. You can't draft C.J. Stroud. He doesn't win the big game, even though he led a game-winning drive and his field goal kicker let him down. That's why winning a lot of times is silly. But you, like, draft Stetson Bennett if you like winning. His ability to beat the opponent with his legs, like that, we didn't see a whole lot of that at Ohio State this year. adding that element to his game, I think, is going to make people more impressed with C.J. Stroud. I saw some people putting that little like highlight viral play where he was able to escape the pressure and roll out and chunk it downfield. And like people are like, oh, yeah, look at that play. He can improvise. He should be the number one pick. Pump the brakes a little bit. But still, he showed you that he can beat you as a dual threat kind of guy. Everybody loves that about Bryce Young. So C.J. Stroud, to me, was the more impressionable of the two. He's more impressive of the two because he added an element that I didn't know existed. Bryce was Bryce. Great, as always. The harsh reality, and look, we know how I feel about Will Levis. I like Will Levis a lot. I think he's the best quarterback prospect in this draft. The harsh reality that I have whenever we look at these quarterbacks is a lot of times we look at the quarterbacks in isolation. So, like, if I like Will Levis, all of a sudden, or somebody likes Will Levis, they're going to say negative things about Bryce Young. They're going to say negative things about C.J. Stroud. If you're a Bryce Young guy, you're going to say negative things about Will Levis. You can like multiple guys. You can like three different guys. But where I kind of find it funny is you could take these three guys and say that they're all capable of being the number one pick, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis. The situation matters so much in the NFL. Like, you could say that they're all on the same tier, right? Well, which quarterback's going to be better? Which quarterback's going to have a better rookie year? The situation that is better. You can look at the cornerback draft, Sauce Gardner, Derek Stingley. If we're saying that those are comparable players, and many people thought they were comparable coming into the draft, we might have had our favorites. Our favorites were Sauce, but they were close. They were 1A, 1B at the cornerback position. Which one had a better year? Sauce did because he was in a better situation to succeed. Right. It's the same thing with the rookie class, like whether it's Stroud, whether it's Levis, whether it's Bryce Young. The dude that gets into the best situation is going to have the better chance for success. And that's what worries me about the Texans situation is that they do not currently have a situation for a rookie quarterback to succeed.
They don't. They really don't. And that's why we were talking about possible veterans that at least for another year could bridge it so that the kid didn't get thrown to the wolves and end up like David Carr. I think when you look at it, this is the way I look at it is because you are in the Levis camp. I've been in the Bryce Young camp all along, and I'm not going to move off of it, though I was impressed with what C.J. Stroud showed me when I finally was able to watch a full game of his, is the fact that it's like how we try to do the Killer Bees every day. We try to be just as realistically honest as we can be. We aren't leaning one way or the other. We just want to analyze all of it. I'm not, just because I'm a young guy and you're a Levis guy, I'm not going to crap on Levis. I'm going to sit there and say, it's good to be the Houston Texans with options. It would be worse if, unlike a year ago, say, you had all the quarterbacks a year ago and then you had Bryce Young. Well, then it would have been cut and dried. There was going to be only one guy you're going to take. It's Bryce Young. There wasn't anybody else. There weren't any other options. There weren't your ability to say, I like more of the measurables than I do the intangibles. Now, to have two or three guys come to the forefront, no matter what you want to do with that pick and how you want to handle the draft, you have more options, which is the best thing you can say if you're the Texans. And that's what you need to have when you're as team as bad roster-wise as you are as the Texans right now.
I think that's the greatest point that is coming from that conversation is that one. Because the best thing from a Houston Texans perspective that can happen, and look, hopefully the Texans, I don't think the Texans are going to lose Sunday. Spoiler alert, I really don't.
I don't either.
I think they're going to win at Indy, which is a scary thought. I'm going to bet that with an emotional hedge.
Lose.
I don't think they're going to lose. I think they're playing more inspired football. I mean, they just got hammered by Jacksonville. The Colts have quit. The Colts
even
are doing
Jeff
nothing.
Saturday? I mean, I would think that they want to go out at home for Jeff Saturday. I don't know.
Hopefully.
And the Texans never have played well in Indy anyway, but we'll see.
Hopefully. But the biggest takeaway I take from like the bowl games is the point that you just made. Is like the elevation of Bryce Young. Great. Boost his draft stock.
Yep.
The elevation of C.J. Stroud. Great. Boost his draft stock. Because I'm of the belief, and I remind me where you're at, I'm of the belief of trade down. Like, I like these three quarterbacks where if you trade down to number five and you just take whoever's there and you add other draft capital, sign me up. I would be on board for that right now.
I liken this again. I keep making the analogy that I like for the best case scenario to be Danny Ainge. When he had the number one pick, but he knew that there were teams enamored with the guy who, first of all, that wasn't his favorite. He wanted Jason Tatum. He knew that Philadelphia was enamored with Markelle Fultz. The fact that he was able to manipulate the top part of the draft, still get the guy that he was focused on the entire time, and got another extra first-round pick and extra draft assets was genius. I want the Texans to be in a situation, and I really, at this point, don't care who it is.
Yep.
I just need Nick Caserio to say, that's my guy. And if he knows that his guy is going to be available at two or three or four, and that a team is just diehard trying to get to one, and I can get more assets and still get the guy that I am hell-bent on being the guy, That's the way I want them to manipulate this draft.
We've also heard Caserio talk to the point where, like, they have – I think this is everybody. I don't think it's just Caserio. And I've heard even, like, college recruiters look at it this way where they have, like, okay, we want to sign two cornerbacks in this year's signing class. We have, you know – we have five guys that we all see on the same tier. We're going to offer all five guys a scholarship to fill those two spots because we think they're on the same tier, and the first two that accept the offer, those are going to be our two. It's the same way that NFL GMs look at the draft, where they have tiers of players. This is tier one, this is tier two, they have it by position, blah, 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 blah. If Nick Caserio goes into this draft, where, and I don't know if this is the case, I would doubt it, but he has Bryce Young, Will Levis, C.J. Stroud all on the same tier. It doesn't matter who's there at number four. If they're all the same tier, he likes them all equally. He doesn't really care which of the three he gets. That's where you trade down to a number four, number five. You add draft capital. You take the quarterbacks that you the quarterback that's there that's all on the same tier.
If they're all on the same tier. Now, if there's one guy that just elevates himself and he's head and shoulders above the rest, then that would be a much easier decision. But because everybody has their literal shortcomings when you talk about a Bryce Young, but you have different guys. Will Levis, who did they play and what did he have around him?
They played an SEC schedule.
No, but I'm just saying, we can do this again because I'm trying not to, to crap on any of the other guys. I'm saying if you're the Texans and you really firmly believe all three of these guys are on tier A, everybody else is on tier B, then I can start saying I don't care which one of the three I get. That's where I'm at.
That's where I'm at right now after bowl season.
And because you wonder with Caserio if he's ever going to be able to take himself out of the mentality of measurables mean so much. Because that's what's going to keep him from taking Bryce Young.
The history of Davis Mills, the history of New England quarterbacks you would think that. But I remember we had a Twitcher before the new year talked about, well, he signed Tyrod Taylor. So, and he's what, 6'1"? So maybe.
But I think at that point, he wasn't looking at a roster that could win, so he wasn't as focused on the measurables.
He's a bridge quarterback, like David Culley was a bridge head coach. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. That's where I'm at, though. I'm trade down. Because, look, if you do go quarterback at number one, I'm of the belief that you have to create a situation for him to have success. We could go quarterbacks 1 through 5, 1 through 10. Which quarterbacks in the NFL right now are the very, very best? The ones that have great situations around them. People like to point, well, look, Joe Burrow, the Bengals went out and got Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow was not good as a rookie. Go look at the Bengals' record his rookie year. But they hired Zach Taylor. Then what did they do the very next year? They gave him one of the very best receivers in the entire NFL. The situation matters a lot.
It does. If
you're telling me that the Texans are going to go quarterback at number one, whichever one, it doesn't matter. It's not the point of this conversation. Okay, if you're going to do that, you have to go all in with that philosophy. You can't just do this half measure. We're going to take a franchise quarterback, but then we're going to keep Lovie Smith. We're going to draft tons of defense and then give that quarterback no help. If you're telling me you're going QB at number one, okay, I can sign up for that. I can even sign up for Bryce Young. I like Bryce Young a lot. I think he's an exciting player. I think he's going to be good in the NFL given the right situation. If you're going to commit to that quarterback at number one, no matter who it is, you have to go all in around that quarterback at number one. You probably have to go offense with the Cleveland pick. You might have to go offense at number 32 should you not screw up and win against Indy this week. And then, of course, the biggest thing is the coach. Like, you can't have Lovie Smith if you're drafting a quarterback at number one. I'm sorry, because I like Lovie. I wish Lovie had success. I wish Lovie could be here long term. But I'm not drafting a quarterback 1-1 and then keeping Lovie Smith.
But also, when you're looking at the entire situation, and Chuck makes a great point that we've been talking about too, you're not trying to get a quarterback for the next year or two. You're trying to get your franchise quarterback for the next 10 years if possible. But that involves the coach as well. So if you're going to go out and talk, and we mentioned Harbaugh, but whoever the apple of your eye is when you also attack the coach like you have to attack what you're going to do with quarterback, is no coach is going to come here unless they have some say so in what they're going to get. And to your point, when you bring whatever quarterback you bring in, you don't have any weapons currently for them or good enough weapons to make him look good. So whether it's that second first round pick or somehow some way free agency and otherwise, you damn well better give him some receivers to throw to immediately if you want this kid to be successful. As important as the offensive line is, you also have to focus on, the minute you take this quarterback, giving him the appropriate weapons for the long haul so that he can do the best job he's capable of doing.
What you just said is why I would entertain the idea of keeping Brandon Cooks.
I think for one more year, I think Caserio, in the back of his mind, that's what he was thinking about when he did what he did with the extension.
Maybe.
Because he was thinking, at least for the short term, to get him off on the right foot. A veteran receiver can help if you draft one, come in and get established, but also give him an immediate right away first wide receiver one target that he needs.
Yeah, I mean, we can be critical of, like, Brandon Cooks being a receiver one in the NFL. He's probably, 25 through 32 from receiver one in the NFL, but it's better than anything they can get.
But if you take the kid at TCU, if the kid from TCU
I'm scared
is available.
I'm scared he's not going to be.
But if he's available with the Cleveland pick and you take quarterback with your first pick, now a coach is going to be more enticed to say, I'm interested in that job.
Well, you're hiring the coach first.
But I think if a Harbaugh takes that job, and especially as hands-on as he was with Kaepernick and basically the minute he drafted him saying this was going to be my guy over Alex Smith. But if you take a Harbaugh and say, we're going to give you your choice of quarterback and get you a receiver right away, and you already have a bell cow running back, it's more enticing for a Harbaugh.
That's the interesting dilemma in all of this, is like if Kasari moves on from Lovie and if he's going to take a quarterback at number one, I don't see that there being any choice that he has to. Is that during the interview process with another head coach, who's making the decision?
Right.
Is it Casario? Is it Harbaugh? Is it Ben Johnson? Because if it's like me sitting in this seat and Nick Casario says, okay, we're taking a quarterback at number one, we're bringing in an offensive head coach, okay, bring in Ben Johnson. And then it better be Ben Johnson that makes that input. Pick.
It's the same way when they needed defense with the Texans and they left the draft with Rick Smith 1 year to wait, especially in the first round, to go get JJ. And how that turned out. You damn well, if you take an offensive head coach and put him in place right away and you're taking a quarterback, you damn well better let him have a say about what you're drafting after the quarterback.
Yeah, because Kasari didn't let Lovie have that say with number three. He drafted Stingley and then Lovie used him in a cover two the entire year. 713-780-ESPN. Did these bowl games change your view at all on these college quarterbacks? A lot of reaction we want to get to. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. 0830, hope they don't take Stroud. Make the last successful NFL. He means name. Name the last successful NFL quarterback out of Ohio State. I'll wait. It's true. Touche. What I saw from the bowl, though, from C.J. Stroud.
Joe Burrow.
Joe.
See what I did there?
I had to think for a second. That's a good call. Would Joe Burrow have had the same success had he stayed at Ohio State? 713-780-3776. What I saw from Stroud, though, is different than like the prototypical Ohio State quarterback, and quite honestly was different than what we've seen from Stroud all year long, where Stroud's going to stay in the pocket, he's going to make a quick drop, he's going to make one read, and he's going to throw the ball to first-round receiver. This was the first game outside of Michigan where they were going up against a really, really good defense that has NFL dudes on it, and C.J. Stroud was beating Georgia in a lot of different ways than we've become accustomed to. It wasn't the quick drop, one read, throw the football to first-round wide receiver, although Harrison got hurt in that game and maybe they weren't the same in the fourth quarter, but he showed his ability with his feet that I think a lot of people didn't realize was there whenever they were comparing him to Jared Goff and those sort of things. Because I looked at Stroud a little bit in that game. You know who I thought he looked like in that game? Was actually Deshaun Watson, where you have a dude like Deshaun Watson out of Clemson wasn't like this 4.2, 4.3 super fast dude. He wasn't like incredibly twitchy, but fast enough, twitchy enough, and had a good enough arm. Deshaun Watson, one of the knocks on him was that he didn't have a very strong arm. I don't think C.J. Stroud has a bazooka for an arm. I think it's strong enough. I think he's quick enough. I think he's fast enough. I saw Deshaun Watson and C.J. Stroud, to be honest with you.
I think that's a fair comparison as they were coming out of college. Obviously, Deshaun was able to grasp a lot of things, but he actually could take it to the next level at the next level, which is something that you're concerned with all these guys being able to do what they're able to do. What I saw in Stroud is what I was telling you about during a break. Like, you're playing, like you mentioned, a Georgia defense with, as much as they lost a lot of first-round talent, we know they just reload. Mm-hmm. We know that they have a ton of NFL talent on that defense. And the fact that the throws that I was impressed with was C.J. Stroud were over the linebacker. No matter how high they jumped, it was just out of their fingertips, out of their reach, yet feathered in there so that it could get over the linebacker, then under the secondary, and a guy crossing at exactly the right time, catching him right in stride where he was able to do something with it after the catch, which is so tough to do. It was timing, it was touch, and it was somewhat of a strength throw because he had to put some zip on it to get it 20, 25 yards down the field. Those were the throws to me that I didn't expect to see out of C.J. Stroud that I was like, that made me have a moment to kind of be taken back and go, whoa, That was impressive right there.
Yep. 1185, the Bears won't take a quarterback anyway. Of course, that's the scenario where if the Texans win and the Bears lose and the Bears have the first pick, the Texans have the second pick. I'm not concerned about the Bears taking a quarterback. It becomes a trade-up possibility.
No doubt. It depends. Like, the market is open the minute the Bears get the number one pick because they're not drafting number one.
No, I don't think so either. Like, even if they want a Jalen Carter or Will Anderson, they're trading down to 3, 4, and still going to get probably one of those guys.
Yep.
1185, Bryce Young wasn't throwing to capital letters All-American wide receivers this year, average at best. He was throwing to a third-round tight end and a first-round running back, though, in Jamar Gibbs. If you go back and you look at his Heisman number, the Heisman year, which was his 2 years ago, his sophomore year. Actually, he's redshirt freshman. I think it was redshirt freshman, even though he played a little bit as a freshman. He played in the four games. Whatever. 2 years ago, when Bryce Young won the Heisman, who were his receivers? Jameson Williams, a first-rounder, and then John Mechie, who was a second-round draft pick. That's the year that Bryce Young's numbers were massive and huge and out of this world. This past year, his numbers took a dip. His numbers were nowhere close this year to what they were in his Heisman Trophy year. So if you're looking at, well, he didn't throw to All-Americans wide receivers this year. Well, that's because his numbers went down. That's why his numbers went down. But even though his numbers went down, still a good offensive line, even though it wasn't as good as normal Alabama offensive lines, still a first-round running back in Jahmyr Gibbs and still a tight end that's going to be drafted into the top three. So he still had weapons. And
sure,
while those All-American receivers at Alabama aren't All-Americans this year, still probably pretty good. They're still average at best. I would say still pretty good.
I mean, when you talk about Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia's of the world, they do reload every year. And so they might not have All-American guys per se as they're rated, but they're going to have guys that are going to develop or going to be young guys that are talented. Or as you said, it might not be at every single position group, though most of the years it is. But there's just so many weapons to choose from that you can't. It's, again, trying to evaluate these guys on a game-by-game basis and seeing like the things that don't matter about who they're throwing to. It's one thing to say you're supposed to make every guy around you better, but you also have to realize that in certain situations, a Will Levis is never going to have the ability to make a young potential five-star high school recruit into making him better and making him a first-round pick, as opposed to, I get that Ohio State and every year at Alabama, Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud are going to have guys that may not always be top five or top 10 or first round picks, but by the time they're done playing there, there's a pretty good chance they're going to develop into those things. So it's hard to say you need to develop your players around you to make them better. You just need to make the right decisions and the right throws and expect that the guys that are doing their job are going to catch the ball and do the things that they need to do.
Yeah. One of the other things about like Bryce Young is that people look, I'm falling into this trap that I hate falling into because whenever you're like propping up one quarterback, you almost feel like you're taking shots at another quarterback, and I really hate that about draft coverage. But what I really hate about the Bryce Young conversation are all the points I hear about Bryce Young. Like, I love Bryce Young, the player. If Bryce Young's a Houston Texan, great. Now, they better hire the right head coach. It's going to let him be in a shotgun, four wide, all of that stuff, because he can't be under center, which is okay. You can win that way in the NFL. There's more than one way to cook an egg.
It's more of a pass-happy offense than it's ever been in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. You put him in a Cliff Kingsbury offense. Right. I know you don't want to hear that. You can have a really good offense. I firmly believe that if you have the right system for Bryce Young, that Bryce Young can be really good in the NFL. What I hate are the Bryce Young arguments, the reasons for Bryce Young. Like, we just had this one text coming in from 9229. His accuracy and ball placement is generational. What?
I don't think
no, it's
true.
Not. His accuracy at Alabama the last 2 years is identical to Will Levis's accuracy the last 2 years. This year alone, Will Levis had better accuracy than Bryce Young. So, like, we hear this criticism of Will Levis that he's inaccurate. He makes these terrible decisions. Well, how in the world does he have a better completion percentage at Kentucky in a bad year where he's hurt all year than Bryce Young does at Alabama? How is his accuracy generational when he has a worse completion percentage than Will Levis? How is his ball placement generational when he has a worse completion percentage than Will Levis with a better situation around him? I'm not anti-Bryce Young. I'm anti-reasons for Bryce Young because I get sick of hearing them. The other one that we hear with Bryce Young is how he's a winner. He just wins football games. Bryce Young is the first quarterback at Alabama. The first quarterback won. Like, I'm not talking the backups. I'm not talking about the third strings because Bryce Young won a national championship when he was Mac Jones' backup. Sorry, I'm not giving Bryce Young credit for being a national championship quarterback. The last time that Alabama had a quarterback won who didn't win a national championship was Blake Sims in 2014. Every quarterback since Blake Sims, whether it's Mac Jones, whether it's Tua, whether it's Jalen Hurts, has won a national championship. Bryce Young's in the conversation with Blake Sims, not the other guys. He's not a winner. Alabama wins national championships. They all have since Blake Sims.
Yeah, I think the
Bryce Young didn't.
I'm not going to fall into, like, again, I'm not going to try and criticize the other guys. I'm just going to say, from a Bryce Young perspective, the best thing I can say about him is the things that you are supposed to be immeasurable measurables, but just his intelligence at the quarterback position. The one thing that I keep going back to, because I keep, like you, I keep hearing of all the people that once you hear the Texans should take Bryce Young at one, well, he's too small and he doesn't weigh enough and he doesn't do these things. But the one thing that I would do is I use him as, and I compare him to a guy like Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel had the same kind of measurables. He was too small, but he was not smart enough to know to get down on every play. He was trying to get extra yards. He was taking hits. He was trying to be a showboat. The one thing amongst all the other things that impresses me about the intelligence of Bryce Young is I don't think he's ever going to be in a situation where he goes one-on-one with a linebacker and says, instead of sliding, I'm going to try and get the extra yard or so. I'm going to put my shoulder down. I think that he understands who he is and what his physical makeup is, to where he's also smart enough to get out of bounds, get down, to slide, that he's going to do his best to not take the big hit. But the fear is that he's still at some point going to take a bit, whether it's just standing in the pocket, he's going to take a big hit.
And I hate that I'm like sitting here crushing Bryce Young, but one of the injuries he had this year was that shoulder thing. Yeah, he's got the AC joint, smaller quarterback. Like, that scares me off a little bit of Bryce Young. Jake Asman just popped in our Twitch. Thanks for listening, Jake. Bryce went to a title game, though, and was awesome in that game. They probably win if Jameson Williams doesn't get hurt, too. Bryce Young in the national championship game a year ago, 35 of 57, 61%. That's okay. A touchdown, two interceptions. Like, is that our definition of awesome? That he threw two picks to one touchdown and completed 61% of his passes? That's awesome? That's our definition. That's why, like, Mike White is the hero of Jets fans. That's not awesome.
No,
that's,
it's not.
If you have more interceptions than touch, if you throw two picks in a football game, you do not have an awesome football game.
I'm glad that the true king of Twitch is in our chat, but, you know, you can tune in for more from 3 to 7. But for me, the biggest thing is that's why you can't use that as a true measurable in terms of, unless, like, the biggest stage, the brightest lights, and you just completely ball out. But you make plays, you know, like, and I go to what Justin Fields did a year ago, or to whatever it was, 2 years ago. The toughness that he showed, which is an intangible you can't judge till you're thrown into that situation, where he took hit after hit, and he should have been, most guys would have already thrown in the white towel and said, I'm done. And he kept bouncing back and coming back and making plays and doing all the things that he did. I think that's the biggest thing that you would say for anybody on that big stage. Alabama's supposed to be there. They're there every year. Ohio State is. Oh, you know, the Oklahomas used to be, the Georgias now are, but you can't just say because they won a national title or not that gives them a feather in the cap, because it's all about, like you said, the guys around you that are consistently there.
Quite honestly, I'm mocking the whole winning take. Like, I think it's stupid if you think winning college football games matters to NFL success. Josh Allen went to Wyoming, didn't win a bunch of games there. Pat Mahomes lost a bunch of games at Texas Tech. Winning in college, it means nothing in the NFL. If it did, Stetson Bennett's a Houston Texan. Roger Goodell, the Houston Texans will be selecting Stetson Bennett out of Georgia, or Max Duggan out of TCU. Winning in college has zero influence on how that player performs in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Tim Tebow theory that I keep going back to. Tim Tebow is the best, one of the best, if not the best, college quarterback of all time. But that's where he ceilinged out. That's where he maxed out. That's why it didn't translate to the NFL, and that's why it's such a science to try and see that these guys have those kind of intangibles and other things that are going to make them good on the next level, too. And I think Stetson Bennett is the perfect example of the next coming of Tim Tebow. He's an unbelievable college quarterback. Give him all the props. He should have been in New York this year for all that he did with Georgia. But that doesn't mean he's going to be the same kind of quarterback on the next level, and he's not.
Cash It or Trash It with the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We're coming off the holiday season, so I can count up the bottles of Gentle Ben I've had over the last couple of weeks. The vodka, the gin, the bourbon, they're all part of that Gentle Ben wall of bottles that I put together over this holiday break. All part of the rotation for me. And Gentle Ben is a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Presedo craft technology that makes them better in taste, aroma, and purity than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste that huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Bin Spirits, had me out to the tasting room to see what I thought. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Bin man. I love it so much that I gave out Gentle Bin for Christmas presents, wherever my old man, my good friends, they all got some Gentle Bin for Christmas, and it was all a very Merry Christmas for them. Gentle Bin is smooth, it is clean, it eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find the Gentle Bin vodka. You can find the gin. You can find the bourbon at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentlebin.com. Also, if you're headed over to a Total Wine, look at those, the end caps. Very special end caps going on at Total Wines featuring our very favorite spirits, the Gentle Bin spirits. Or if you're headed to a Rockets game, you can find Gentle Bin at any bar inside the Toyota Center. And also, head to the Gentle Bin bar at Section 125 and get their signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Did I mention that bourbon, by the way, that you can get at the Total Wine, you can get at the Specs, you can get inside the bars there at the Toyota Center? Their bourbon, double platinum winner in the prestigious Ascot Awards. Got to get your hands on that. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Bin.